This blog post, by the way, will contain language that some people will find offensive. I mean, that's kind of a bit of a silly thing that people say, really, isn't it? Because you could say that about anything. Some people find incorrect grammar offensive, but you don't warn people against that, do you? Radio 4 should warn people against programmes that contain incorrect grammar. What I mean is they will have swearing in it. So if you don't like that, then listen to another blog. There are plenty of my blog posts that don't have swearing in them. They probably do have incorrect grammar, though. David Eagle's blog, read by David Eagle. Again, apologies for the quality of the recording. My computer's still not fixed, so I'm using just this digital recorder to record the blog posts on. I assumed that you would rather have the audio blogs now than have to wait potentially a couple of weeks to have a better quality recording. I may be wrong about this. I don't know. Perhaps you're sticklers for high fidelity. Perhaps that's one of the reasons you listen to the blogs, because you enjoy the quality of the recording and you just tolerate the actual blog posts. But I very much doubt that. This blog post was posted on September the 9th, 2014. It's entitled King Gong Part 2. Last Sunday night, I did one of my first stand-up comedy performances. It was my first appearance at the King Gong Comedy Competition at Manchester's Comedy Store. In fact, it was my first experience of such an event. It is likely that you are new to the concept of the King Gong Show. In fact, less than a week ago, I too was completely unfamiliar with it. The concept is that anyone can have a go at performing comedy. It's an open mic comedy night, giving new and up-and-coming comedians, as well as members of the general public who believe they might be funny, the opportunity to perform for 5 minutes. They may not actually reach 5 minutes, though, as the audience has the power to dismiss the performer if they are not to their liking. Three people in the audience are given a red card each. When the three red cards are held up, a gong sounds and the performers leave the stage. If there is more than one act that has lasted the full 5 minutes, then they are all invited up to do an extra minute. The audience then applauds the act that they like the best, and the act that gets the biggest ovation is crowned the winner, King Gong. I'll split this blog post into two parts because I think it'll be far too long for the average reader, but not far too long for the average listener. I think you have more staying power, you listeners, than the readers do. Don't tell the readers I said that, though. It's a little secret. We don't like the readers, do we? I know, you're my favourite. In tomorrow's blog post, I'll talk about my performance, but today I want to talk you through some of the other acts. It was quite a night with some very interesting performers. My performance was third in the first half. A part of me was hoping that the first two acts would be awful, so that I'd be hailed a comedy god regardless of what I said. Unfortunately, the first performer, despite getting off to a shaky start, when his second joke failed to elicit much of a laugh and he exclaimed, "Fuck!" and nervously laughed, began to get into his stride and the audience warmed to him as he went on. 3 minutes into his performance, someone held up a red card, but the other two remained down, and he lasted the full 5 minutes. The compere said at the start of the show that most people don't make it anywhere close to 5 minutes before being gonged off. If the next act lasted for the full 5 minutes, then I'd really have my work cut out. While the first act was good, I wonder whether one of the reasons he might have survived the full 5 minutes was because he was the first on, and the audience was still sussing out the format and the night, and they didn't have anything else to compare him to. The compere had asked at the start of the night how many people in the audience were coming to the King Gong night for the first time, and the majority of the audience cheered. The second performer seemed much more nervous. His pace was much slower, and he used a lot of redundant words and phrases, presumably out of nerves, and perhaps to fill time. I tend to do the opposite of this, throwing too many words into the mix at rapid speed, which can be just as bad. In most instances, I won't include actual performers' material here, though I'll make an exception in certain cases because I assume that these people won't be using this material ever again, given the reaction it got and the fact that it was either devoid of any humour or just didn't make sense. The second performer's opening joke was that his sister was expecting a baby this coming Friday. "They don't know the sex of it yet," he said. "So I don't know whether I'm going to be an auntie or an uncle." This did generate a laugh, but the laugh lasted too long for it to be genuine amusement at the actual joke, and seemed to be more the audience laughing at the man and his nonsensical comment. After this, in inverted commas, punchline, he paused for 7 seconds before continuing. By the way, I've got a recording of the night, which I was listening back to when I wrote this. I haven't remembered this word for word in infinitesimal detail. I'm not sure whether the pause was due to nerves, due to the realisation that people were laughing at him, due to the realisation that people were laughing at him rather than with him, or perhaps he genuinely thought the laugh was a positive reflection on his joke and he just decided to bask in his glory for a few seconds. Just as he began to talk again, someone held up one of the red cards. There were no more jokes, just a few more time-killing phrases such as, yes, I'm very excited to be here. But the audience didn't share this sentiment, and the other two cards were held up one after another, bringing his act to a close after 38 seconds. The third act was me, but I'll tell you more about that tomorrow. I've just listened back to the fourth act's performance. At the time, he didn't really do anything for me, but this was not a reflection on him, but rather due to the fact that I was still mulling over my performance just a few seconds earlier. Was I brooding, though, or was I celebrating? Find out tomorrow. I've listened back to his performance, and I think he's really good. His style is calm and understated, not forced. His observation and jokes were intelligent. Perhaps his act could be described as geeky, which is by no means an insult. I think he was suitably different from the mainstream comedians out there. He didn't seem to be trying too hard to replicate an idea or a person that he'd seen on TV. We got a sense of who he is as a person, and that person was very likeable, erudite and funny. His name is Benji Waterstones. You can check him out on Twitter, and then there's a link on the actual blog. So if you're interested, type him into a search engine or go to my blog post and find the link. He lasted the full 5 minutes with just one red card in the air. The fifth act lasted for 1 minute 40 seconds. He was okay, I suppose. His opening routine got a few laughs, but for the wrong reasons. I was talking to this black girl the other day, he began, before spotting a black girl in the audience and asking, it wasn't you, was it? It wasn't really a necessary part of the act. It didn't add anything to the rest of the joke. And it seemed a bit odd to isolate this particular person out of the crowd just because she happened to be a girl who is black, which is hardly uncommon in Manchester. I think some people were a bit taken aback by this, and there were a few awkward laughs from members of the audience, along with some murmurs of disapproval. Tricky one, mentioning race at all. Some people really get up in arms about it or get uncomfortable with it, even if what you're saying isn't really that racist. You've obviously got to be very careful with it. It was just unnecessary that this person pointed a black person out and said it. It was just, it didn't do him any favours. Obviously, it's not a big thing, and the joke wasn't an attack on black girls, or this particular black girl, but it was an unnecessary aside that lost the audience, both for its slightly confrontational nature and because the comment meant that the punchline took longer to reach. The sixth act was 17, and his, in inverted commas, comedy was certainly very adolescent. Again, I don't think I need worry here about quoting his material in this blog post, as I doubt that he'll be using it on stage again. At least, I strongly hope not, both for his sake and for the rest of us. I don't want to be spiteful about other acts, but this 17-year-old boy had seemingly assumed that the kind of comments that he makes to his mates in the playground would translate well to a more mainstream and mature, let's say, comedy audience. This is his routine verbatim. I'm going to say it now, and I'm going to make comment on it, but at the end of this blog, you can actually hear the routine for yourself, to hear and appreciate just how ridiculous it was. So this is him speaking. The other day, I'm not going to lie, I was horny as shit. I was so horny. It was like, you know when you're a heroin addict and you get the shakes? He then proceeded to make a growling noise and violently shake his body. Some people in the audience were already getting a bit fed up by the routine. Many people in the audience had cottoned on to the fact that he was essentially a horny teenager telling us, through a variety of misplaced and pointless similes, how horny he was. People were either laughing at him or making noises of disgruntlement, urging the card holders to exercise their power. But the card holders did not take heed. Perhaps they were enjoying the novelty of this performance. This is one positive of a night like the King Gong night. You can see some really good and up-and-coming acts, some promising fledgling attempts, with the occasional bout of humiliating and agonising awkward bile. You get to see once-in-a-lifetime performances, or at least performances which really should be once-in-a-lifetime, if the performer has an ounce of sense. His way of relating to the audience was somewhat odd too. You know when you're a heroin addict? Well, no, funnily enough, I don't, having never been a heroin addict. And I can't speak for the rest of the audience, but I imagine that the majority of them would have not had the experience of being a heroin addict either. Although perhaps I'm wrong here, and this description was resonating with the vast majority of the audience. Although it might destroy the humour somewhat, as the audience remember their tragic past when they were hooked on drugs. And the only thing you need is that sweet, sweet pussy. You know what I'm talking about? The audience did not respond to this question with an emphatic yes, nor a murmur of understanding, but rather a bout of bemused and awkward laughter, and the holding up of the first red card. I think he thought, though, that the laughter was a positive reflection on his performance. He didn't seem too taken aback by the laughter, which is probably one of the loudest responses of the night. Even the acts that went down particularly well were getting less of a laugh than this horny teenager calling us all heroin addicts. If you were an ember of the audience, I've written here, I must correct that. At this point, maybe people were being reduced to embers of an audience, and actually that is quite a poetic mistake. But anyway, it should have said, if you were a member of the audience who didn't speak any English, then you might assume that this lad was going down very well, and he was the best and funniest act on the bill so far. And in some ways, I suppose he was. Does it matter that what he was saying wasn't clever or thought-provoking? People were laughing, and that's essentially what people were there for. There was no way that he could make a living out of this routine, but tonight he was making people laugh. Just as much, if not more, than the other acts. Even if it was for different reasons, and unintentional on his part. So, I looked online for an escort. I had a choice. Do I just call a girl? Do I just call a girl and say, like, hey, do you want to fuck? Or do I get an escort? The only thing is, some girls are fucking effort. You know what I'm saying, man? Some girls make you work. The amount of diplomacy involved is staggering. You could get, like, peace in the Middle East with the amount of effort it takes. So, I looked at, like, one profile, and I saw this fine piece. I mean, solid 10 out of 10, you know. So, I arranged to meet this girl. And no joke. Well, at least he's got one observation right here. No joke is pretty spot on. I was working at the Premier Inn. You know the one near the cathedral? Some hotels specialise in, like, business management. Some hotels specialise in, like, spa facilities. But the Premier Inn near the cathedral specialises in discreet prostitute pickups. You know, I mean, you think, why the fuck don't they just knock it down? I'll tell you why they don't knock it down. Because half the Manchester councillors have been blown by some disease-ridden prostitute as we speak. You know what I mean? So, I'm waiting there, and at this point, my dick is so hard. When this girl tries to fuck me, I'm going to knock this girl out. When she tries to fuck me, I'm going to knock the fuck. At this point, there was a mix of confused and bemused laughter, but he is unable to continue to be heard, as the majority of the audience at this point are now appealing to the two remaining cardholders, shouting, off, off, off. Although some people were shouting, get him off, get him off. But this seems a bit of an ironic and unfortunate heckle, given that being got off is precisely what his entire routine is about. And an audience shouting, get him off, while pointing at him, might be all this overly horny teenager could stand, causing his penis to explode. And given the apparent hardness of his dick and its ability to knock people out, this could be rather dangerous for the front row. I have to say that this is one of the oddest blog posts to read. The remaining two card holders finally heeded the cries of the audience and held up their cards, and our horny teenage friend was forced to leave the stage, dragging his unnaturally hard tail between his legs. He lasted for 2 minutes 15 seconds, which is probably about the amount of time he would have lasted with that escort, unless proceedings were curtailed before that by her being knocked out by his super hard dick. Oddly, it turned out that this 17-year-old had his dad and granddad in the audience, and they were laughing along. I don't think I've really talked about sex in front of my dad or granddad, but here was this teenager shouting about his hard dick and his horniness on a stage to them and to hundreds of strangers. The seventh act spent over a minute setting up his first joke, but it seemed to be going nowhere, and the card holders, along with the rest of the audience, didn't expect that their patience and tolerance was about to be rewarded with a punchline. He made a joke about this at the start of his set, which went down okay, but as soon as the first card was held up, this seemed to throw him. He stammered a bit, but he could not regain composure, and the second card was lifted in the air. He never got going again, messing up the punchline to his joke, the setup of which no one heard above the compere's announcement of the raising of the second card. The third card cut short his second attempt at the same punchline, and the gong sounded, heralding his departure after 1:22. How to describe the next act? He was a man grotesquely dressed as a woman. He didn't really make any jokes as such, but spoke in a camp voice about his boobs and his or her boyfriend. For a few seconds, he got some bemused laughter, but after 46 seconds, the three red cards were lifted in the air, and the gong sounded. The final act of the first half was, in my opinion, the most cringeworthy yet. I felt genuinely uncomfortable and was begging the card holders to terminate the performance. He came on in a wheelchair. His opening joke was, "I was going to do some stand-up tonight, but obviously I can't stand up." It's a tired and worn-out line, which I've heard by other disabled comedians before. It got a tiny laugh. It was to be the best laugh that he was going to get in his entire routine. All these other jokes were along the same lines. "So, I'll do all the jokes sat down. Is that all right?" There was the tiniest of chuckles. He then raised his voice. "I said, is that all right, Manchester?" Some people shouted yes, but the majority of the audience were bemused and quiet. People often get fed up with me, and they say, "When are you going to get off your fucking fat arse?" Well, I'll try, but... There was some awkward laughter. The first card was lifted. He then told a story about his journey here from York. It wasn't a joke, but he said it like it sort of was. He basically told us, amidst a plentiful supply of swear words, that his train had a bus replacement service put on, and he couldn't get on the bus, so the train company got him a free taxi. There wasn't really a punchline to this, unless you class him triumphantly shouting, "Result!" He tried to start another joke about being in a wheelchair, not being able to stand, but the remaining two cards shot up, the card holders taking their stand against this cringeworthy nonsense. The second half was a mixed bag, with a combination of really good, competent acts and people making tits out of themselves. There were two more acts that lasted the full 5 minutes, and deservedly so. There was Monty Burns, a brash, confident, high-octane Scottish man, whose comedy was perhaps a little similar to that of Frankie Boyle. It was mainstream comedy, but I don't mean that as an insult. I just mean that his comedy would work well with a mainstream audience, and I could imagine him on TV. He'd obviously done stand-up many times before. He had the demeanour of a stand-up comedian, and he'd obviously honed the act, possessing a good metre and style. You can follow him on Twitter. I'll put the link to his Twitter on the website, or you can just type in Monty Burns, whatever, if you're interested. The second act was a female duo called Hawkeye and Windy, who sang songs with piano accompaniments. The humour was dark, but the songs were very funny, and they had the audience in the palm of their hands. Again, there's a link to them if you want to check it out, or just type it into a search engine. I don't have to feed you these things. That's why I like you so much, the listeners, because they don't expect me to provide you with URLs and web links and that kind of thing. You'll go out and do it yourselves, won't you? You're independent. Unlike my readers, they expect to be spoon-fed, you see. I like you so much better. Don't tell the readers, though. It's our little secret. I've done the same joke twice. I'm like that wheelchair man. I could imagine Hawkeye and Windy, by the way, on Radio 4. They might have... I don't think they have been on Radio 4, but it's the kind of comedy that would really work on Radio 4. And they were probably the most accessible in terms of Radio 4, the Radio 4 remit. So maybe that Benji Warstones, actually, maybe that could work as well. Anyway, So currently, you know, I'm ad-libbing now. This isn't written down. You get an extra, yeah? Just for you, because I like you so much. So currently, you know that there were at least four finalists, but you don't know whether there was a fifth contender. Tomorrow, I shall talk you through my performance, and we'll see whether I made it to the final five, if indeed there was a final five. Until tomorrow, thanks for reading, it says here. But you were listening, weren't you? Anyway, there's a bit more listening for you now, if you're interested. Just an extra tiny bit at the end of this blog post, because I'm going to play out with this 17-year-old's comedy routine, which I've already read to you, but so you can appreciate it from his mouth. You don't know where that mouth has been, although, in all honesty, I think it hasn't been in the places where it would like to have been. Hence his entire routine. So I'm going to play you out with that. Thank you very much for listening, and join me tomorrow for the next part.
So the other day, I'm not going to lie, I was horny as shit. Like, I was so horny, it was like, you know, you're like a heroin addict, so you get the shakes, you're like, fuck. The only thing you need is that sweet pussy, you know? So so, a long time, Peter Street becomes interested for an escort. And I had a choice. Do I just call a girl? Do I just call a girl, like, hey, do you want to fuck? Or do I just get an escort? The only thing is, some girls are fucking effort, you know what I'm saying? Like, some girls make you work. The amount of diplomacy involved is staggering. You could get like peace in the Middle East with the amount of effort it takes. So I looked at like one profile, and it was a dime piece. It's solid 10 out of 10, yeah? So I arranged to meet this girl. And no joke, I was waiting the Premier Inn, you know the one near the cathedral? And some hotels specialise in like business management, some hotels specialise in like spa facilities. The Premier Inn near the cathedral specialises in discreet prostitute meetups. You know? And people are like, why the fuck don't they just knock it down? I'll tell you why they don't knock it down. Because half of the Manchester councillors have been blown by some disease-ridden prostitute as we speak. Yeah. So waiting there, and at this point, my dick is so hard, I could knock this girl out. If she tries to rock me, I'm gonna knock the fuck out of her.